if they can't deal with the fact that I'm a vocal atheist, then fuck them. I didn't want that job anyway.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk to our scientist friend Hedge. We talk about the state of science funding and mice that fucking glow.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
That's me.
And the lovely Molly Glover.
Hello. It's weird to say joined by my wife and then Tim, isn't it? Like, you want to go to Tim first.
I do.
I always do, too, when I do it. Yeah. That's what I'm playing.
No. It seems unnatural. It seems like preferential.
The fact that you two are married seems kind of unnatural.
Well, I get that a lot. And we're joined by our friend Hedge.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Hedge.
Yay, Hedge.
Not her real name.
Hedge.
Is what?
Hedge?
Her accepted fan moniker, as they say.
Yeah.
Hedgy.
Hedgy.
Everyone else says Hedgy. It's always been Hedge.
It's Hedge to me. It hasn't always been Hedge. It was Hedgy first.
To me, you'll always be a Hedge.
And I knew you as Marina. It took me a while to, for the nickname.
The first thing I remember, because the first time I've known you as long as I've known Molly, by the same means, which is to say a bulletin board, HTML bulletin board that a friend of ours runs, and I always, all I could think of was the comic The Tick, with the ninjas that are holding up twigs, and they're like, nothing to see here, I'm a hedge, move along, I'm a hedge, and they're like you know, and everyone, just, you know, someone else's problem, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide field turns on, and everyone sees a hedge, even though they're clearly a row of ninja-suited men holding branches, and that's what I've always thought of is that was who I imagined you as on the internet before meeting you in the real world. That was the image.
Was a posse of ninjas.
A posse of ninjas. Masquerading.
A posse of ninjas.
Yeah, ninjas.
Is ninjas the plural of ninja?
Yes, all right. One of my many linguistics friends.
I'll take it.
Hedge is my hero because she's a girl scientist, and I always wanted to be a girl scientist, but I wasn't as good as science, so my path lay elsewhere. So I have a positive envy of your girl scientist status.
Well, you make more money than I do.
Which is really sad, guys.
She works for a board game company. Yeah. I was like, seriously.
You're at the U?
I do. I work at a lab in the neuroscience department at the U.
University of Minnesota.
I was going to be less specific instead of more specific.
Neuroscience means brain.
Good job.
Thank you, Molly. Thank you.
Yeah. They were explaining. I figured out.
That actually, in the manner of scientists, when you get several scientists into a group, it's basically impossible for them to talk about anything other than science. So when I had my first job after college, it was in Albany, New York, and we had basically, I moved to Albany to start this lab. Start working in a lab that was starting up. So everybody else in the lab was basically a recent transplant to Albany and was, like me, pretty much freshly out of college. And so we were, our cohort was all scientists, except for the occasional, you know, boyfriend of somebody in the group who would come to a party and inevitably, we would start talking about lab stuff, about science, devolve into, you know, ridiculous words.
Get comedians in a room, same thing happens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's comedians in a room, they start talking about neuroscience. It's the weirdest fucking thing. I'm serious.
Yeah,
what the fuck
stuff
is going on?
Neuroscience.
Neuroscience jokes. Oh, my God. Anyway.
Well, one of the outsider boyfriends took to just interjecting with sciencey words like enzyme. Anytime start going a little too far.
Yeah.
If he was getting kind of left behind.
Yeah. Yeah. He just kind of interject with whatever new word he'd learned that week. Like, you know, B cell.
I thought of a neuroscience joke.
Oh, right. Did you?
Your mom's Alzheimer's is so bad, the theory of plasticness or neuroplasticity isn't even going to help her. Snap!
Oh!
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty
my
weak.
My facial
sauce.
Expression did not translate over the
Yeah,
podcast,
it's poor radio edge. It's a
yeah.
It's a
fight. Chad from my band, he sings, you know, hey, I just met you.
Yeah.
And it's, he does, hey, I just met you, and this is crazy. I have Alzheimer's. Hey, I just met you. So,
that's cute.
That's the neuroscience. Actually, all these are just
Alzheimer's
jokes. They aren't neuroscience jokes at all.
We're just picking on poor old mentally disabled people. That's...
Yeah, but they won't remember. So that's the beauty of it.
They're fair game, like dissing the Amish on television.
I love being angry all the time anyway, generally. Because, I mean, I would be too.
That's got to be frustrating.
So, hey, is that what you study?
That is not what I study. I don't study Alzheimer's. Otherwise, I'd probably have more Alzheimer's jokes in my...
I'm sure.
Wouldn't we all?
I wouldn't. I don't have any jokes about what I do study, so I think that my logic is kind of flawed.
Well, then I guess you're just going to have to describe it.
All right. Well, what I study is the intersection of stress and circadian rhythms. So, basically, how... you respond differently to the same stressor depending on whether it's your active period or your quiescent period or and then how different stresses at different times can then affect your circadian rhythmicity. So it goes both ways, just like those bisexual agnostics we were talking about earlier.
Right.
Those are people that just can't make up their mind about anything.
Yeah.
So I work in what's called a translational lab. So the work that we do, the research that we do, is in an animal model and will potentially then translate to human models. In principle, anyway, the things that we learn by stressing out these mice can tell us something that will directly translate
to
human behavior, and we can maybe affect a change that way, but we're not like testing a drug that is then going to be available on the market next year.
Right.
This is different from basic research, which is the really nitty gritty, you know, a lot of planetary science is basic research. Mm. So, and in the biology world, things like, okay, well, what's the phylogenetics of these plants? That's considered basic research. It's not going to translate into human.
Sure.
There are people who are doing actual medical research on human subjects. They're testing behavior. They're testing medicines. They're testing whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fancy bionic knees or whatever they've got.
I got to say, you know,
the effects of Jack Johnson music on anorexic patients before they eat.
Now that's depressing.
I got to say that what amazes me is that you having seen many mice in my day, I don't understand how you can tell the difference between a mouse that is stressed and a mouse that is not stressed, because they all look stressed all the time.
Well, that's because they're stomping around.
Their life is all about, at any moment, I'm going to get eaten.
The difference between a mouse that's stressed and a mouse that's not stressed, for me, is one that's in a cage versus one that I have just, you know, like, put into a tiny tube for 15 minutes. And that's kind of the difference, you know. It's a four-dimensional process. You have to have that time component.
Just put him in the tube and let him sweat a while. He'll talk and squeak.
Zap his family. Put his family in an electrocuted room.
Like
that Stephen King story.
Yeah, cat's eyes.
Yeah.
Those are poor mice.
Yeah.
That one was called Quitters Incorporated.
They eat their babies. Don't.
Yeah, I don't have any sympathy for mice. Wait, so I read a lot when you post online about your fun but not fun frustrations with science.
Yes.
And
dead mice.
Yeah.
Dead mice and
you
I mean
the freezer breaks.
You
and
one time you were you were asking me about finding a motherboard with what's the
industry supported architecture?
Yeah, an ISA slot, which is predates the PCI slot, which they don't even put on motherboards really anymore.
Yeah.
So, and the IRC slot is
ISA slot.
ISA, right? Is like an analog slot. Like the best modems were there because they would have the actual dip switches on the modems.
Yeah.
I mean, it's far less fancy. It's old shit. You can't find that anymore.
Yeah.
And you needed that to do. Your results recording.
Yeah, basically we had these running wheels that are in a light-tight environment so that we can adjust the light-dark cycles for these mice independent of the light-dark cycle for the rest of the mice in the room and say, okay, well, when the mice are in constant dark, what does their behavior look like? If they're in a light-dark cycle, what does their behavior look like? Mm-hmm. How long does it take for them to recover from an artificially induced jet lag, basically, a light-dark shift in one direction or another. And then, if we stress the mice, does it shift faster or slower? So you have to be recording from these running wheels
lots and lots of
all
data.
The time. Yeah, we've got, you know, each long box can hold 12 mice, and so we've got 12 running wheels, 12 data streams from that long box, and we've got four of the long boxes set up. We've got four more, but we ever use them. So you can potentially be collecting constantly from 48 boxes. Well, the data collection computer for this, the data collection program we use is DOS-based.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
It's
some sort of operating system for disks, I think.
I mean, it's actually great because it means that if, you know, if the power goes out, say, which it does, with surprising frequency. The computer just turns right back on, boots right back into the program, and starts collecting again.
That's
and
all
so,
it does, is that,
and
so...
And so we lose the amount of data from the time that the power is off. And as soon as the power is restored, everything goes back to normal, and we don't have to do anything with it.
That's
nice. Great. That's important.
Yeah.
My boss keeps talking about upgrading this computer, and... You know, we could probably put something together with, like, one of the little tiny computer chip, like, Arduino or something.
Yeah.
We could make something that would collect this data. Would it do it as efficiently? Not necessarily.
And you probably don't have the funds to hire somebody to do the programming for it to make sure it would work exactly
so
right.
So, mostly what would happen is that I would have to learn how to do this thing that I don't know how to do in order to do it because I'm the only one who can do it. Because it's basically my PI, my boss, and me.
So you guys would be responsible for developing the skills to essentially engineer the things you would need to do your job.
When you guys need money, like for something like this,
what
do you do? Like what do you apply for grants? Is it there's someone that you can call up and what happens? I know.
Just get on the bat phone, call the mayor.
Call the money phone.
Which is like what's the first step when it's like we need $10,000?
I mean so it's great in that that we could go ahead and spend time on this and make a program or something, if we really had to. Programs do exist for it, but they typically cost a lot of money because there are, you know, a couple hundred people in the world doing this stuff.
Right.
And so anybody who's designing the software for it needs to set a price point that can recoup after selling, you know, 100 versions of the software.
Sure.
We can't afford that.
Yeah.
Our lab is funded off a single NSF grant at a time, which is a grant that lasts for 3 years. It's typically about $500,000.
Oh, that's not much for 3 years.
That funds everything in the lab, including me, not my PI. NSF grants don't fund the PhD who is in charge of the lab, the head of the lab. So his salary is supported entirely by the department because he teaches, essentially.
Okay.
So he's doing two jobs at once.
Right. And are they...
And only one of them pays them.
If they're not financially incentivized to work on these projects, beyond it being, like, a part of their professing job, is it, like, is there clout that comes with this? Like, the findings, the publishings, the paper writings, is that
Well, I mean, certainly
is that the draw?
You wouldn't...
Is that the draw, right?
even with tenure, you would be hard-pressed to keep a job if you weren't also doing research.
Or writing books.
In a science department. They want scientists to teach science.
Just like in the English department. If you're not writing books or plays or poetry or something, magazine articles. Like, if you're not writing, you're not teaching.
Yeah, or like in the math department, if you're not, you know, doing math.
If you don't have a part-time job ringing someone up at a register.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have a sweet Defense Department grant, which is what most mathematicians have these days. I mean, like, math and physics, some of it's funded by, you know, NASA or NSF, but a lot of it is Defense Department these days.
Just like bigger, more accurate missiles or airplanes.
They have a vested interest. Yeah.
So is the majority of funding in science these days, is the majority of funding government, is it hard to get private grants?
Private grants are iffy. There certainly are. We've actually been funded for a collaborative project in the last year with money from the Wallen Foundation, which is actually a local philanthropic organization put together by the Wallen family. They've got connections to Medtronic and other major industries in the Twin Cities. They have a long-standing connection with the university. And they are people who are really dedicated to science and are really dedicated to giving people the ability to do small projects and kind of get started on something new and interesting. And the grant that we've had has been for collaborative work between somebody in the physiology department. And so that allows for some more kind of integrated and cross-department, cross-genre work. Essentially. But those grants, you know, like I said, we've been funded for the last year. It's been less funding than you would get from the NSF. It is very limited term. If you were trying to run an entire lab off of small grant funding like that, I think that if you wanted to avoid any sort of conflict of interest problems, you would be very hard-pressed. When I say conflict of interest, I mean, you know, getting money from industry people to test, to do research on something that they're interested in.
They have a motivation, and that can influence your findings.
They've got a drug, and they want
to. Yeah.
And mostly, scientists have good ethics. Mostly. And the people who are going to get industry funding to test something they're getting money from them and they're getting the product, which is probably not readily available otherwise. Mm-hmm. And they're probably, you know, there's somebody who has been doing work that is related to this. But in general, they're not good. I mean, they're not going to screw it up. They're not going to say, okay, well, since you funded us, we're going to do this.
It's not like direct quid pro quo.
You're not working in their laboratories. You're working in your own laboratory at the university, and they're giving you this substance, and you're saying it does this or it doesn't do that.
Evaluate these claims.
Yeah. And so I actually remember, you know, somebody on Facebook posting, I don't even remember what it was, but it was, okay, well, here's an interesting study, it says this, and somebody says, yeah, but it was funded by a drug company, so we can't trust it. It's like, that's
limited.
I understand the concerns behind that, and certainly you need to be able to evaluate whether something is good science and where it's coming from and who's funding it and who's got a vested interest in this.
Right.
That's important. That's a part of being scientifically literate in this country.
Yeah.
But you can't just throw things out the window because they weren't funded by the NIH.
That's conspiracy theory stuff.
Sure.
That's the kind of like knee-jerk reaction that it doesn't have any bearing.
But you talk about being scientifically literate in this country, and I don't think we are. At all.
Yeah.
Minnesota's better than most of the country.
And our friend group is, of course, I mean, we have geeky friends. So we have a much higher percentage of people who, even if they aren't scientists themselves, I mean, they at least understand what the scientific method is, and they understand looking at citations.
They can determine what's a reliable source and what's not.
Yeah. Yes, I've actually, a couple of times, people we know, that we all know here, have, from, like Lexi one time posted an article, and I was like, that article, man. Like, I don't like that headline, and like the sources are from here and here. And she took it down. She was like, I hadn't really looked at it until you said that, and I was like, you're right. That's I'm not putting that up. Yeah, that's, and that's no, most people we don't have that in their sphere.
So when when you talk about like the ethics of where the money comes from and the motivation, if like your study is if a company that makes a sleep aid came to you guys and said, hey, we don't even want you to test our product. Your data on stress and sleep could be useful to us in some way. We'd like to like throw some money at you to keep you getting your results because that could be beneficial to us.
There isn't a great system for that sort of thing set up.
Like the Sleep Number bed people couldn't.
If they want to do that, I would be very interested in seeing how they would go about presenting us with this option.
Do you represent Sleep Number? Please leave a comment.
Yes.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
That would be interesting. Do we relieve stress by sleeping on a Sleep Number bed?
Can a good night?
I'd like to volunteer for that.
Can a good night sleep
to be a test subject?
You want to go in the tube?
But
No.
What I want to know is how you're going to make
a tube big enough for me.
That will not fit in our tubes.
How do you make a Sleep Number bed for the mice? Is what I really want to understand.
Do mice understand the concept of a number, let alone a sleep number?
It's one mattress between two cages, and each mouse can hit a lever a certain number of times to change his mattress.
And the third lever gives him cocaine.
So it's like 3333333333.
Yeah.
One, I guess. Like, I just
want
to sleep.
It doesn't even hit the number; it just plazes out.
Well, I wanna take a step back from this and say that while you have proposed an experiment that you know the different cages that have different mattresses and find this preference. Place preference experiments actually take a really long time because you actually have to train the mouse to tell you something useful.
Yeah.
Huh. And I think that that's something that a lot of people don't know about research and about science is how long it takes.
Yeah, I think everybody, you really want to know the answer, like, today.
Yeah, you really do.
Are you telling me that mice don't intrinsically know to push a lever to communicate something to me?
I know this is going to blow your mind, Molly, but... That is exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, I am heartbroken.
So do you? Hang on, I gotta know. In these instances, do you guys train your own mice, or are there people that train science mice?
Is there a mouse training facility?
Mouse boot camp.
Oh my god, say there's a mouse training facility.
She's not gonna say that.
I don't want to like
she
break
wants
your
to
heart.
Say it.
No, I know.
But no, we could order mice that
hospital for animals.
We could order mice that have already had a particular surgery done. So maybe they've already been gonadectomized or something. So,
sure.
They've already been fixed. Or neutered.
Yeah.
In case you couldn't figure out what gonad or whatever the fuck he said was.
Wow. Way to words, Tim.
I totally understood the word. I just can't say it. Give me a break.
That's fair. That's
yeah.
Fair.
Anyway, sorry. Gonadectomized. I said it
I
almost
like
right.
Husky rasp.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just sang all night last night. I'm like, ooh, I've got a sexy singer voice. Anyway. Gonadectomized.
So
see, I said it right. Third time's charm. Anyway, go on.
So you can order mice that have already been gonadectomized.
Yay!
Balls chopped off.
If this is a drinking game.
If this were Pee-wee's Playhouse, Conky would be going off.
But, like everything, they cost a lot more than an intact animal. And just like me writing software, learning how to write and then writing software versus buying... commercially available software. The question is time versus money.
Way to bring it back to the earlier topic, Hedge.
Frankly, we don't have a lot of either.
Yeah,
time or
yeah.
Money.
But, no.
You
or manpower. I mean, you don't just have people to throw at it, do you? Or do you have that
resource?
Well,
we have some undergrads.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say, because if you have undergrads,
yeah,
you can just be
bitch
like...
work.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
But they're undergrads.
I mean,
they're
kind of
useless.
No, you know, we've had a lot of... amazingly smart and capable undergrads. We've also had a few...
They're college kids.
A few that are, that have other stuff going on, or they...
Maybe it's not their passion.
This isn't the right lab for them, or they get really sick for a semester and they're really behind.
Yeah. It happened to me.
College is hard. We've got some pretty good ones right now, and they can get some things done, but they can't, they're not in the lab all the time. You can't be like, here, figure this thing out.
Right.
You say, hey, we need this immunohistochemistry done, and they come in and they do that whenever they have time, sort of thing.
True.
And they are great for us because they don't cost us a lot of money compared to, say, a graduate student.
Oh, yeah.
Who may or may not be capable in the lab by the time you get them, and do cost money.
Graduated from college expecting livable wage money.
That's interesting because graduate student. When I was a graduate student for teaching, I did student teaching, I didn't get paid shit, it was the same thing though. I mean, it's you're doing the actual teacher's job.
That's how it is with doctors too. Yeah. I mean,
right? But that's different. A little different.
Your residency, don't you work and not get paid, essentially?
No, you get paid. You get paid for residency.
You just get all of the grunt work.
You get, like, 90
and
hours.
And, like, extreme weeks and nonsense. And
isn't it frustrating, I think, a lot of the time that science seems like half of science is just about having enough money to do science?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I have been working just in this lab for the last seven years, and... and that's fairly atypical. Most people my age, if they graduate with a degree in science and they go into science and they plan to stay in science, they're passionate about research, which is something I would say is fairly true about me. They go and they get a PhD and they want to run their own lab. We have a friend who does that. She's doing microbiology.
She was on the show. Laura Okagaki.
Previous guest.
Yeah.
They're back like around episode 7 or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Fun guy.
But I don't want to write grants. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I work very closely with my PI because we are such a small lab, and he's fantastic, but I don't want his job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's been kind of stymieing because now I've been in this lab for 7 years, and it's like, well, I'm really good at what I do, but... I have no job security.
Yeah.
And
it's not, you have to ask yourself, is this what I want to do forever? Do I need
to? Basically, is there a way to do what I want to do? And the answer doesn't really appear to be yes. So,
Without going back to school for.
Without doing a job that I don't want to do.
Yeah. That's your advancement at this point.
Yeah.
Hmm. Man.
Is to get out of the lab, and I don't want out of the lab.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, at least you're. Yeah. It's good that there's a person who's passionate about research and the lab portion of it who's in that position, and that's you.
Yeah.
And we're lucky to have you on, too.
Nobody puts Hedgie in a corner.
Nobody.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
But,
NSF puts Hedgie in a corner.
Oh! Fuck you, NSF.
NSF, I hope that you prepare for this dance-off, because I'm going to show you
a dance-off?
I'm going to show my
moves.
Oh, an NSF dance-off.
She just brought it.
I'm not the reason Debbie got that abortion, I'll have you know. You may think that because you think less of me because I'm poor.
Sometimes Molly gets science confused with Dirty Dancing.
Wow.
It happens sometimes.
It happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
In the NSF's defense, though, it's not their fault.
Yeah.
The NSF doesn't have money to give us. We have been submitting grants to them, and they say, this is a really good grant. You're a really good lab. We know that you can do what you say you want to do, and we're really interested in the results. We think it's important. We think that this is a linchpin piece of information. You are one of the top 5% of the grants that we have received.
Wow.
But we can only give it to 1%.
We can only give funding to 3% of the grants.
Yeah.
The
right.
NSF, the NIH, they're funding at 3% these days.
The funding has been cut pretty significantly
in
the last few years.
Automatic budget cuts hit that.
Yeah. Yes.
The furlough and all. So what percent of that, if they're only funding 3 and they think you're in the top 5 that are super legit, what percent would you say is maybe like kind of outright like bullshit, no one should fund this?
I don't think that the people who are submitting grants to the NSF are in, I mean, maybe the bottom 10%.
Okay.
I think, I think, you know, when you look at stuff like the Golden Fleece Award and shit like that, and they come out, you know, that these are the stupid studies that we're funding. It's like, what they do is they come up with, they look at the title of the study, yeah. and yeah. they don't look at what are they actually trying
yeah.
to figure
oh,
out.
Yeah, yeah.
Or why.
You know,
what,
or why.
Yeah, because yeah. maybe what they're trying to figure out sounds stupid and is silly and seems really like pedantic or a very
yeah.
small bit of data, but that could be the key to understanding this whole larger tree
well, yeah,
of data.
It's,
like,
yeah, I mean, one of the things I'm reading about, we're going to Yellowstone later this year, and
yeah.
there's some stuff about the algae that and bacteria that they discovered in the hot springs
mm-hmm.
that allows them to do a certain kind of DNA replication that sounds really pointless until you recognize that it basically is everything that forensic medicine is based on.
Oh, wow.
You know,
oh.
and it's all because of research that they did on
yeah.
this bacteria
yeah.
in these hot springs. And so you start with going, well, bacteria in these hot springs, who gives a flying shit about this? But then you start to stack, well, what?
I do.
Well, I mean, well, no, I do. I do too. I mean, there is the pure science.
No,
this is
yeah,
cool
I
mean, piece of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's
yeah.
also the, you know, most of the stuff that they're researching
yeah.
has applications that are
yeah.
relevant
yeah.
and interesting.
Well, and like
my mice have firefly genes in them.
Yeah.
Who studies fireflies? Okay, who cares? Whatever, they're bugs. Except that they make my mice glow, and we couldn't do what we do without
face.
Glowing mice.
Tim's
glowing mice! The most awesome
yeah.
thing
I
ever!
Feel like
Tim's face was amazing!
I feel like we buried the lead this entire podcast. Your mice glow?
Mice glow!
Yes.
Yeah, firefly
yes.
genes
only,
in them.
Okay, they only glow when they produce a particular clock gene, and only in the presence of the substrate for the firefly enzyme.
All right, the point is, your mice glow.
So what
yes.
triggers their glowing?
So the gene that the firefly enzyme is connected to is PER2, which is short for period 2.
Uh-huh.
It is one of the, we're gonna bust it all out here.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
One
yeah,
of
yeah.
the canonical clock genes, which are basically this set of molecular clockwork that utilizes DNA feedback loops to create rhythmic expression of genes that lasts about 24 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Every cell in your body has these. So
wow.
every cell in your body has an approximately 24-hour clock.
That's awesome.
That's
and
so,
so
awesome.
When you
but
shake tissue from
why
the
don't they make us glow?
Because they're not fused
we're not
to
fireflies.
God
firefly
damn it.
Enzymes.
Yeah, we don't have their
so is it,
had to make
this is
that.
So unfair.
So
we don't need to make
that.
It's, the
yeah.
mice don't intrinsically know how to
so
glow.
So what is the stimula that like, do you got to poke them in the right place, or is it a certain time of day, or...
No, it's time of day.
It's time of day.
Yeah.
At night, at, like...
Like a firefly.
Like, you can tell it's 8
so
p.m.
Then,
because the mice are glowing.
So then what you're trying to do...
That's
is,
so awesome!
If I'm going to totally guess it wrong, you know, maybe I am, but... So when you're playing with the circadian rhythms of the mice, and you've got this gene in them that's going to make them glow at a certain time of day, one of the things you're looking at is if you fuck with their circadian rhythms, do they glow at a different time of day?
Yeah.
Fucking
awesome.
A!
Yeah, right?
That's so cool!
Isn't that cool?
Why aren't people
science.
Just throwing money
yeah.
at you guys? That's the cool... Yeah.
Well, anybody who's listening to this podcast who has money, throw it at
yeah.
Angie.
Okay,
she has
so,
mice that glow!
But this actually brings up something very interesting.
Can
there is a group
the
at the...
More interesting than what we're talking about already?
Well, it gets into
yeah.
this idea of how we fund science. So
yeah. Yeah.
there is the people at the NSF who say, okay, well, your grant is in the top 5%. They know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They know what we say, what we're talking about when we talk about science.
Right.
They know whether the experiments that we're proposing are reasonable. They know whether our budget is reasonable, whether
mm-hmm.
the amount that
it
money
sounds,
that
it sounds
for,
it sounds pragmatic.
Yeah. Yes. And there is a group at a lab at the Amplatz Children's Hospital, which is the new children's hospital at the University of Minnesota Fairview
mm-hmm.
hospital system.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gorgeous building, but that's beside the point. They're crowdfunding their lab. They are attempting to crowdfund because they couldn't get NIH funding.
Kickstarter.
That's kind of
like
amazing.
Indiegogo lab.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
In that... It's very easy for any of us to throw a little money at this lab
and,
you know, quintuple the amount of money that you pay in taxes that goes towards science, because that's not much.
Have you thought, are you guys going to follow
no.
suit if it works?
The problem with this is that the people who are funding this, they don't know crap about science.
Right.
So,
they're just doing money.
So right now, there's this one group that's doing it, and... maybe the science is great, maybe it isn't. I'm not speaking to that. But the fact of the matter is that most people can't tell.
I see. There's no peer review. No reviewing what they're.
There's no
data.
Evaluation of
there's
their.
You just toss your money into the science bucket and hope that it does something.
And that's why we pay taxes.
Right.
That's why we pay for people.
That's our money in the bucket for science. Taxes.
They're making sure
what we're
get the
paying,
most out of our
what
science
we're paying
buck.
For is the NSF.
And the
who are smart people,
NASA,
but they're spending my they're spending my bucket dollars on war. They're not spending my bucket dollars in the science bucket where I want to throw them.
That is the problem.
They're taking all my science dollars and putting them in their war buckets, and it's not cool
God
anymore.
Damn it! I hate war buckets.
Really bad.
Well, seriously,
worst Spielberg movie ever. I think we need to
five questions.
Yeah, dude.
Okay. So our five questions.
You ready,
Hedge? The pressure's on.
Did you study? Did you practice?
Where's your science god now?
Question number
one. There is no science god, woman!
Good, we agree. So question number one, what's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
Have I seen any movies in the last 30 days?
We can't answer that question.
No, I'm actually asking. I don't remember. Have I seen any movies in the last 30 days?
What's the best movie you've seen recently
that you can think of?
Well, I did. Can I weasel my way around the question? I did see the first episode of Doctor Who that I have ever seen.
Oh, in the last
that
counts.
This works.
First ever episode of Doctor Who. What episode was it?
I don't remember.
Who was the Doctor?
I don't remember.
What did
he look
like Frankenberry?
No, I think it was Tom Baker. Old
school.
I seem to remember a scarf. Romilla.
Romulus
was in it.
Sure.
Canine wasn't in it.
He wasn't in it?
It was written by Douglas Adams.
Pirate Planet.
Yes.
Yeah.
What'd you think? Did you?
I enjoyed it. Some of the science was a little iffy.
Science was timey-wimey.
are you going to watch more?
Yeah, I've already, I watched a little more a couple weeks ago, but.
You should watch the new stuff.
It'll happen.
I watch it all. I'm a big advocate of watching.
Pick through the old stuff. Get the gems. But
it's the same with the new stuff. You know, there's really good episodes and there's really bad episodes in any era of Doctor Who.
All right. Question number two is: who is your favorite atheist character?
Atheist character.
Yeah.
God, I didn't study for these.
Past examples have been Iron Man, Mal Reynolds.
Those are good.
Glad you like them.
I will admit that I tend towards fantasy books that don't have a lot of atheist characters in them.
Sure.
Stupid gods that are real.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
I mean...
Magic, etc.
It's legitimized. I don't blame anybody for believing in gods that actually exist, but...
Yeah.
If they walk the earth and shit, like...
That's pretty concrete.
That's a fair answer.
Carl Sagan's a character, right?
There you go.
Yeah, sure.
I'm a big fan of Carl Sagan.
He'd be so happy right now, what with Colorado opening up their dispensaries to the public today, because he was an advocate for
he was
weed.
A big pothead.
Yeah,
just,
awesome. Good for him.
And dreamy.
And those eyebrows.
Yeah.
And that dicky. So our third question is, what is your geekiest hobby? And traditionally our definition of that is, what's the thing that you do
science.
That other geeks are like, that's fucking nerdy?
Science?
Is it science?
It might be science.
It's more than
your
just
hobby?
A profession, it's a hobby?
I'd say so. I mean, I do science on things that aren't mice all the time.
like in your everyday life, you use science?
Does everything else you do science on, does it all glow?
No.
Damn. I'm kind of stuck on that.
Just the Ninja Turtles you made.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, what?
Okay, question number four. What is your favorite sandwich? And please be specific.
Is a burger a sandwich?
Yes.
All right, then I got this one. I have been thinking about this. I was like, shit, what's my favorite sandwich?
Didn't think about the first three, but you thought about this one.
Damn, Tim.
My favorite sandwich is the Bangkok Bluesy from Blue Door Pub, which is a local eating and drinking establishment that makes stuffed hamburgers, which are
yeah.
Juicy Lucy.
Sure.
Yeah. So the
Bangkok, Minnesota owns that shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Bangkok Lucy is a beef patty that is stuffed with fresh mozzarella cheese that has been marinated in coconut milk, essentially.
Oh, what?
So yes. Far, I'm really happy.
Yes, and then, yeah. So that's all, like, gooey inside of this burger that's now, like, you know, size of half of a tennis ball at this point.
Right.
And then it's got some pickled, like, daikon and carrot on top of it.
Okay.
And then the bun, and they toast the bun, and so it's all nice and shiny on the top, and then toasty in there. And they serve it with this curry coconut milk dipping sauce.
Okay.
We're getting that.
Yeah. And
that.
So, you know, the Blue Door Pub, they're fantastic.
Where are they?
There's, the original pub is in St. Paul on Selby and Fairview.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So, actually pretty close.
Awesome, yeah.
Is that so
close
open
to my house?
Yeah, we may have to go there on the way home.
Is the pickle stuff like a relish, or is it like a chopped up, like a coleslaw-ish?
No, it's kind of fresh coleslaw-y.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's like marinated vegetables. It's
like refrigerator pickles.
They're pretty crunchy.
Stuff. Yeah.
If you're not from Minnesota, the Juicy Lucy is basically, it's a stuffed burger, a burger stuffed with cheese, where it's like a cheeseburger.
Traditionally cheddar, I think.
It's just a napalm bomb that burns your tongue off, and
if you're not careful when you bite in, they do ejaculate molten lava
in your mouth, or out the butt.
But
if
you come to Minnesota and you want to know, like, what's the iconic food you should eat if you're in the Twin Cities, I feel like a juicy Lucy,
or swing by Kowalski's and get some tater tot hot dish from the deli,
walleye,
or I feel like have a freaking Bangkok Lucy.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Freaking Bangkok Lucy, and
right,
you now know where to go.
Question number five is, what's the stupidest thing anyone's ever said to you about your atheism or agnosticism, whatever, your secular whateverism?
I grew up in a magical world where it was not an issue.
Ah.
Kansas? But
if it was
issue
anywhere, it wouldn't be Kansas.
Yeah.
And
not even as an adult or anything? You've never had anybody...
Well, you're a scientist, science is more secular. There are people with religion and science, but
absolutely
it is more secular.
But
you grew up with kind of hippie parents, Renfest stuff, I mean, a lot of that kind
of... A lot of science fiction.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents were both atheists, even though I was certainly raised within the traditions of their Judeo-Christian upbringings.
Yeah.
Sure.
But by the time my parents had kids, they had firmly stopped believing in God. I don't know if those two are related, but I went to church, but it was a Unitarian Universalist church, with a friend of the family sort of thing. So, I have never been particularly, high in contact with people who
would be dicks about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then certainly there were a lot of people whose religion is a main center for the life when I was in college, but it was a women's college. There was a lot of kind of intellectual debate about things and not a lot of...
You're all grown-ups about that shit.
What's the stupidest thing anyone's ever said to you about science?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Now that's a question that I don't think I can answer. We don't have time.
Well, you're going to have to comment when this
yes
goes up. I want to hear if you
yeah
think it over until this airs.
Yeah. Yeah, if you have like a particularly bad...
I've had people say, like, how do you... Like, there are more truths than science.
there are immeasurable things in this universe
that
matter.
There are
things that matter beyond what science says or doesn't say. And it's like, yeah, sure.
Okay.
I will give you that. But you don't get that at the expense of fact.
Right.
I'd be like, don't you work at the mall?
What you're saying is, there are people who are saying, like nonsense before reality, and you're saying, no, reality before nonsense.
Well...
And not even
you can have as much nonsense as you want, but you don't get to ignore the reality.
You don't get to deny reality.
Perfect.
For your nonsense.
I think that's a great note to end on. You don't get to ignore reality, because there's shit out there that we know is real, and we prove it with science, or we
and
try to understand it with science.
Yeah.
And we need to fund that shit. Thanks for being our guest.
Well, thanks Hedge. For having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Hedge. It's great to have you.
Write your congressperson.
Yes.
Write your congressperson.
Yeah. Your House of Representatives is a little more stingy right now with the budgeting, but certainly your senators are good as well. And that's the only place it's going to change.
Awesome.
Yeah. It has to start there because those are the people that write the checks. Yeah. We are Geeks Without God. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. As always, send us your answers to our 5 questions at 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. And we'll see you next Tuesday. Bye.
Bye.
Squeak, squeak, squeak. Are you glowing? Squeak, squeak. Yep. Squeak, squeak. Me too.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks without God.
Oh, look at Data. Naked pictures of Brent Spiner. Those would sell.